glad that Jesus loves me. I'm glad that he's made me to know it also. I'd like to turn this morning to the book of Matthew, chapter 16. Book of Matthew, chapter 16. We'll read verses 25 and verse 26. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? These, of course, are the words of Christ. They are a part of his conversation with his disciples, which began back in verse 13 in the coasts of Caesarea. Again, it is important to recognize that what we just read is spoken to the disciples. We see that in verse 13. We see it again in verse 21. We are reminded that he is speaking to his disciples. Though at times in the discourse he speaks directly to Peter, but when he did so in the hearing of the disciples, and it was for their benefit. Everything in this discourse, beginning with verse 13, leads up to verse 24. Everything being said is leading up to verse 24. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And then the words of our text, verse 25 and 26, are a summary, basically, of verse 24. They are not only a summary, but they are also a warning. And again, remember that they were spoken to the disciples. In verse 25 and 26, we read of losing, we read of finding, we read of gaining and losing. We read of an exchange. What Christ is saying in verse 25 and 26 to his disciples is realize what is important and live for that. And if you don't, you're basically throwing away your life. You're wasting your life. Don't know which title to go with, so I'll let Brother Mark Smith decide on that when he puts it on the website. I was thinking, don't throw away your life. I was thinking, don't cheat yourself of the best life or the exchanges of life. But we'll... the close of the message, we'll come back to verse 25 and 26. But before that, we want to see what leads up to it, this discourse. And we've preached on these verses many times. But the entire discourse of Christ with his disciples strikes at the very heart of so-called contemporary Christianity in church life, and strikes at the very heart of it. It strikes at the very heart of that which is centered and consumed with self and the world. The entire discourse strikes down the very idea of casual or convenient Christianity. The entire discourse serves as a very sharp rebuke to those who want a Christianity that makes no demands, and those who are indifferent toward the things of the Lord. Again, everything in the discourse is leading to the pinnacle of life, which we see in verse 24 in those two words, follow me. That's the pinnacle of life. Follow me. Follow Christ. Again, Christ is speaking to his disciples. So who are his disciples? Well, they were those who openly and outwardly confessed Jesus Christ. They were those who were outwardly living for Jesus Christ. They were outwardly engaged in the work of Christ. So the life that Christ is speaking about goes beyond that. It goes beyond the open and outward confession of Christ. Certainly it includes it, but it goes beyond it. It goes beyond outwardly living for Christ. It includes it, but it goes beyond it. And it goes beyond outwardly being engaged in the work of Christ, though it does include it. But it does. We have to realize it goes beyond, what Christ is saying goes beyond these things. Again, we keep saying it, but again, everything in the discourse comes to the last two words of verse 24, follow me, which is a call to his disciples to live a life serving him, to live life separated unto him, to live life having him as the preeminent one, he being the priority and the emphasis of our life. It is a call to live life with him being the focal point, with him being the dominating factor, with him being the object of our life, the center of everything that we do. It is a call to imitate him. It is a call to obey him. It is a call to be fully committed to him. Follow me, he says. It is a call to lean entirely upon him. A call to depend entirely upon him. It is a call to live life closely identified with him, personally experiencing him. It is a call to have our lives shaped by Jesus Christ. Again, everything in the discourse is leading up to those two words or that call. Follow me. It is a way of life that is all-encompassing. It is a way of life that affects our entire being, our entire life. He is speaking about a way of life that is thorough, that is all-inclusive, that the world would call fanatical. It is a way of life that is single-minded. It is a way of life that is obsessive. Follow me. So Christ begins the discourse that leads to follow me, and he emphasizes several things. The first thing he emphasizes is a right perception of Christ. And I believe there's a definite order here. In verses 13 through verse 15, Christ asked his disciples two questions. One was concerning the world's perception of Christ. Who do men say that I am? And their answer is given in verse 14, which reveals that the world merely speculates about Christ. And in all their speculation, they make Christ less than who he really is. And all their conjectures concerning Christ would have no life-changing impact upon them. And you can be sure no one will get to verse 24 without there being a perception of Christ that has a life-changing impact upon us. You won't even get, there's no sense in worrying about it. You will not get to verse 24 until you have a proper perception of Jesus Christ. He then asks a second question. knowing that they would not have the same thoughts as the world. Verse 15, he saith unto them, but. In other words, they're not going to have the same thoughts. Whom do ye say that I am? Peter, acting as spokesman, answers in verse 16, thou art the Christ. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. He did not say, we believe, we think, it is of our opinion. He says, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. There was assurance. There was certainty. There was conviction concerning the person of Christ. You will not get to verse 24 without there being an assurance and a conviction concerning who Jesus is. You won't get there. Christ, leading up to follow me, then reminds Peter in the hearing of the disciples in verse 17 that it was the grace of God that made the difference between their perception of Christ and the world's perception. Verse 17, and Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father, which is in heaven. You will not get to verse 24 until the amazing grace of God grips your hearts. It's not going to happen. Christ, leading up to follow me, then reminds Peter in the hearing of the other disciples in verse 18 of Peter's own insufficiency and the sufficiency of Christ. He says, thou art Peter, thou art Petros, thou art a stone. That is, Peter, you are a mere stone, you are a pebble. And then he directed his attention to himself, and he said, and upon this rock, upon this Petra, pointing to his own significance, pointing to his own sufficiency. He is saying to Peter, in the hearing of the disciples, you are insignificant, Peter. You are insufficient in and of yourself, but I am everything that you need. I am the foundation. Peter, you're not the foundation. I am the foundation. And we'll never get to verse 24 until we realize that. You'll never live verse 24 until you realize, I am not sufficient. I am insignificant. He is the foundation. And everything is to be built upon Him. You see, people try to get people into verse 24. They have no chance of getting there until these things are in place. Christ, leading up to follow me, then reminds Peter in the hearing of the disciples, verse 18, that the work of Christ cannot be thwarted. He said, I'll build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. That is, Peter, I'm going to do what I'm going to do and nothing can stop it. His work cannot be thwarted. There has to be the assurance that God's work is worthwhile. It cannot be overturned. You are not wasting your time. You'll never get to verse 24 without that conviction. Christ, leading up to follow me, then sets forth his example in verse 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. This is more than just a declaration of his sufferings, his death, and his resurrection. It is a setting forth of his example. It is a setting forth of the compulsion of his heart. It is a setting forth of his spirit and his attitude toward the will of God. And if we're ever going to enter verse 24, we must be possessed with the attitude of Christ toward the will of God. Christ then, leading up to follow me, then revealed an attitude that is detrimental and must be overcome. After Christ said what he said in verse 21, Peter took him to the side and rebuked him in verse 22. Basically saying to Christ, Lord, you are above such suffering. Lord, save yourself. You are above this. And in verse 23, Christ revealed that such an attitude was of Satan and was also an offense to Christ. And then he told Peter what his problem was. He said, thou savorest not. That is, you are not relishing and delighting in the things that be of God, but those that be of man. And any time we relish and delight in the things of man, you'll never get to verse 24. There has to be a relishing and delighting in the things of God. Christ, leading up to follow me, then revealed in verse 24 that our will must be in the direction of Jesus Christ. If any man will come after me, no one's going to do that without a right perception of Christ all the way back. If any man will, it shows a determination. It shows a resolve, a yearning, an eagerness, an enthusiasm for Christ, resulting in a being drawn toward Jesus Christ. If any man will, Christ again, still leading up to follow me, reveals that this determination for Christ must be so powerful, must be so consuming, must be so influential that it causes us to deny or to renounce and reject ourselves. People will say, oh, I want to follow Christ. I want to live for Christ. But that has to be so influential that it causes us to deny ourselves. You can't get to follow me until you deny yourself. Christ, leading up to follow me, reveals that this denial of self is necessary to the next step, which is take up the cross. You will not do that until you deny yourself. We're to take up this cross, and it's something that we voluntarily do. And we will not do unless we deny ourselves. The cross, of course, as we've pointed out many times in the past, is the expression of the world's hatred. We must so deny ourselves that we think it to be nothing, to be thought the scum of the earth. The cross speaks of surrender and submission to the will of God. It speaks of an obedience that is voluntary and faithful without any reserve unto death. That's where we've got to get if we're going to follow Christ. And this denial of self is crucial. It's absolutely necessary. We have to be willing to be hated. We have to be willing to be ridiculed and mocked and rejected by the world. That brings us to follow me, which is a life lived for Him. It is the ideal life. Follow me. It is the goal. Follow me. That brings us to our text, verse 25 and 26. And our text really is a summary of verse 24. It is a summary of the whole conversation. It's a warning. It is illustrative of what is laid out in the discourse, in particular, verse 24. Keep in mind who Christ is speaking to when you read verse 25 and 26. Christ is saying in verse 25 and 26, if it is foremost in our minds to live for the temporal, we lose. We lose. He is saying that if one lives for the gains of this world, they lose. You've lost. You've thrown away your life. He is saying that all external things are trivial compared with the life that we are called to live. You see how all this goes back to how important it is to have a right perception of Jesus Christ. He is saying that if you are focused upon the temporal rather than the spiritual, you are unprofitable. You're unprofitable. Oh, but look at all the things I have. Look at the beautiful house. Look at the car I drive. Look at this. Look at this. I'm set for life. You're unprofitable. You lose. He is saying that if your life is absorbed in the temporal rather than the spiritual, if you are earthbound, you lose. And you live an unprofitable life. He is saying any time the temporary becomes a priority over the spiritual, we lose. Every time. Every time. No exception. Every single time that we choose the temporal over the spiritual, we lose. We have lost something. And we have thrown away that moment. It's gone. We've thrown it away. He is saying that if you fail to live the life of verse 24, you have made an exchange in which you lose. You have made an exchange. We make them every day. He is saying that if you choose that which takes you away from God, you lose. You lose. You choose that job. You choose that school. You choose that person. Whatever. You choose anything that takes you away from God, you lose. That needs to get through to us. We lose. We haven't gained. We've lost. We've made a foolish exchange. A foolish exchange. You read in Hebrews 12, in verse 16, that Esau was a profane person. There's his problem. What that means is that Esau made light of that which was sacred. Again, getting back to how important our perception of Christ is. He made light of that which was sacred. He placed too much value upon the here and now, and not enough value upon the things of God. Sadly, most fall into that category. The world falls into that category. Most who profess salvation fall into that category. As a result of the fact that he was a profane person, we read that he, for one morsel of meat, sold his birthright. He exchanged the blessings of God for the material. Why did he do that? Because of a spiritual problem. because he was a profane person. He exchanged the blessings of God for the moment. He saw more value in that morsel of meat, the Old Testament basically says a bowl of soup, than he did in the blessings of God at that moment. He saw more value in a bowl of soup than the birthright. And almost everyone says, what a fool. And you're right. What a fool. And many of God's people have done far worse. Many of God's people are identified in the foolish act of Esau. You may ask, what in the world was Esau thinking? Be sure of this. He wasn't thinking right. And when one makes such an exchange, they're out of their mind. They're absolutely crazy. Esau failed or did not calculate accurately between a morsel of meat and the birthright. Because of an inaccurate calculation, he made an exchange. He made a trade. And oh, how often God's people exchange the spiritual blessings of God for the here and now. For the here and now. It's foolish. It's absolutely crazy. It's absurd. How often God's people are convinced and convince others that it's necessary for them to make such an exchange. It's never necessary. It's never necessary that you and I make such a foolish exchange. Well, Brother Dan, you know I got to work. You don't have to work there. Well, you know the economy. On and on it goes. Trying to convince you that I'm making a wise decision. When they're doing something absolutely stupid to exchange the blessings of God for the world. Well, you know I would like to. Well, that seems to me, that even makes you more foolish. I really don't want to make this exchange, but I'm going to anyway. Well, that's even more foolish. Brother Dan, I'm crazier than you think I am, is basically what that's saying. Oh, how foolish. It is never necessary to make such an exchange. And every time we do, it is a foolish rejection of God. And we always lose. How often God's people exchange a table prepared by the Lord for the husks of the world. They make that trade. We come here on Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, Wednesday nights, or any other time. A table has been prepared. A table of the Lord. And someone chooses to go to a little league game, a soccer game, a football game, a family reunion, a camp out, it doesn't matter. On and on we can go. They have chosen the husk of the world, and they lose. They lose. They've thrown that moment away. They've wasted that moment. They lose every single time. And they come back. Oh, he had such a wonderful time. You lost. Do you realize what you lost? How can it be wonderful? You lost that which is important. And then they'll show you pictures. And everybody, oh, they've all lost their minds. It's sad. The day in which we live. And then someone will say, oh, I wish I could have gone. I wish I could have thrown away what you just threw away. I wish I could be as foolish as you. These are the things that people are saying. How often God's people exchange being in the presence of God and the presence of God's people for the affairs of the world. Oh, Brother Dan, we need to have more fellowships. And the very ones that say that, mark it down, will not be here. Well, if you would have planned it a different time. No, they would rather be hooked up with the affairs of this world. But it sounds good. It sounds spiritual. We need to have more fellowship. I'm not interested in being with God's people. I'm not interested in fellowship. And only if nothing else is going on. But we need to do that. It's constant. Foolish, foolish exchanges. They exchange the joy of the Lord for the pleasures of the world. What a terrible, terrible loss. And how much has been lost in every one of our lives because we've made foolish exchanges. Anything that causes me to lose a proper perception of Christ, I lose. Anything that causes me to lose appreciation of God's grace, I lose. Anything that causes me to lose sight of my insufficiency and the sufficiency of Christ, I lose. Anything that causes me not to see Christ as the foundation of my life, I lose. Anything that causes me to lose sight of and reject the example of Jesus Christ, I lose. Every single time I get caught up in the thinking of the world and get the world's perception of life in my mind, I lose. I lose every single time. And so do you. Anytime my will moves in the opposite direction of God's will, I lose every single time. We need for that to grip our hearts. Anytime my determination is lessened for Him, I lose. Every time I live for self, I lose. When I fail to surrender and submit to Him, I lose. When I live not serving Him, it is because I'm serving something else and I lose. I've made a foolish exchange. If you're not serving God today, you are serving somebody and you have made an exchange and it's a foolish exchange and you lose. And your family loses. And many others lose also. When He's not preeminent, when He's not the priority and the emphasis of my life, it's because something else is. Every one of us has a priority in life, and if it's not God, it's something else. In other words, we've made an exchange, and it is a foolish exchange, and we lose. Every time. Every time. When I'm not committed to Him, it's because I'm committed to something else. I've made an exchange. I've made a bad exchange. I have made a foolish exchange. I have thrown a part of my life away, and I lose. I lose. When I'm not leaning and depending upon Him, it's because I'm leaning and depending upon something else. Everyone here is trusting in something. And if you're not trusting in the Lord, you're trusting in something else. And if you're trusting in something else, you've made an exchange. And you've made a foolish exchange, and you lose. There's no getting around it. We need to stop looking at people as wise who make it in the world. As my Bible tells me, the fools, they've made bad exchanges. And I'm not saying, because I know people are thinking what they're thinking, but I'm not saying everybody makes in the world does that. That's not what I'm saying. But my life is not identified with him. It's because it's identified with something else. Every one of our lives are identified with something. And if it's not identified with God, it's identified with something else. And if it's identified with something else, we have made an exchange. We have made a foolish exchange. And we have lost. We lose every time. Oh, we need to realize the seriousness of what Christ is saying in our text. For whosoever, doesn't matter who it is, for whosoever will save his life, preserve his physical life, shall lose it. And whosoever will lose, be willing to lose his life for my sake, shall find it. Shall find life. Real life. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world? If he shall gain the whole world. I don't know of anybody who has gained the whole world. If a man could gain the whole world and lose his own soul and lose that which is truly important, what shall a man give in exchange for soul? You see, we need to weigh everything in the light of the spiritual. And come to the realization that many things just aren't worth it. You got to work Sunday. You need to stop and say, sir, ma'am, it's not worth it to me. It's not worth it. I lose much more. It's not worth it. You got to do this. You got to do that. Grandkids are having a ball game. Kids are having a ball game. Got to go. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I'm not saying that you neglect your children. That's not what I'm saying. But realize what's important. What is most important. And we just have to come to the conclusion. It's not worth it. If I move here or whatever. I mean, we can enter anything into the choices we make. It could take me further from God. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Well, I'm going to marry so-and-so. They're lost. It's not worth it. But I love them. It's not worth it. That needs to stick in our minds. They're going to take me away from church. I can't be as faithful as I ought to be. It's not worth it. If it takes away our faithfulness, it's not worth it. I'm going to buy such and such a toy. It's a great deal. I can't pass up this deal. I work Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday. That common sense tells me the only day I can use it is on Sunday. It's not worth it. I don't care if they're giving it away. It's not worth it. We lose. We lose. Brother Dan, you know we bought such and such and we got to use it. No, you don't. You've already lost. Don't continue to lose. You've already made one bad decision. Don't continue to make one after another. We lose. And in closing, in Esau's case, in Hebrews 12, verse 17, we read that word afterward. There was an afterward. And there is. We make exchanges. And there's always an afterward. You can't avoid it. There's always an afterward. And in the case of Esau, the afterward could not be undone. He repented. He wept and wept and wept. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Could not be undone. This is serious. That we make the proper exchanges in our lives. Because every single day, you and I are faced with exchanges. Constantly exchanging. And we have to make exchanges that are wise. That which helps me spiritually. That which draws me closer to God. And we have to avoid foolish exchanges. We ought to get up every day and say, "Oh God, do not let me make a foolish exchange today. Lord, don't allow me to do it. Because there is an afterward. Oh, the afterward may not come in 5 minutes. It may not come in a year or two. But I'm telling you, there is an afterward. There is a harvest. And we do reap what we've sown. The man who goes out and plants corn doesn't have a harvest the next day. And yet how many of God's people say, "Well, Brother Dan, there can't be anything wrong with it. The Lord hasn't punished me." Harvest doesn't come immediately. Get in your car and drive down the road and look at farm fields. It does not come immediately. But harvest does come. There is an afterward. And it ought to cause us to fear. Looking at the choices that people make, you fear. Because you know there is an afterward. God help us. God help us to see the seriousness of the exchanges of life. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.